Welcome, everyone, to our Learn and Be Curious podcast. I'm super excited to have Candace Capps here today, who's a director in our Same Day Operations Network, and we're going to talk about speed. And I love speed. I love speed because our customers love speed.
Our customers love speed.
And I know they love speed because the faster we make our service, the more they shop with us. We've been studying this for a long time, actually, and it's super interesting. When we speed up the service, the probability that somebody buys a product from us goes up. So that when they're on the detail page or when they're in checkout, the faster the promise is, the higher the probability that they're going to buy that product. And what's even more interesting is that if they buy it, they're going to come back sooner and they're going to shop more when they do. And so we get both effects going on. It's been a huge focus. I saw this come to life actually when I first started Amazon. It was to launch our consumables business, so, which is our word for groceries and everyday essentials. And I remember when we first put toilet paper on the site. And so we started selling toilet paper. And back then it was pre-Prime. Prime was about 5 minutes old. I think there was like 1,000 members. So almost everybody else was getting our Super Saver shipping promise. That was five to eight days. Yeah. It was really interesting to watch because, you know, there is a set of people who will wait 5 to 8 days to get their toilet paper when they've run out. But it's actually a very small set of people. And what we've seen is that as we've increased the speed, as we got Prime with 2 day and then eventually Prime 1 day, and now what we're delivering, of course, is same day in a matter of hours, the number of people willing to buy and able to buy toilet paper from us has shot up. In fact, this morning when I was looking, like I do every morning, on the what's the top sellers, the second item was, of course, a toilet paper item. But I'm going to start where I always like to start. You're going to know because you've been with me on a couple of these site tours, but tell me your Amazon story.
So I started in 2011.
2011, 15.
Almost 15
years ago.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. As a college hire area manager. So in 2011, it was a new program where we were hiring undergrad students, fresh bachelor degree, to come in and run shifts essentially within our fulfillment center network. And so I was a area manager at a building in Sumner, Washington.
You're 22
at the time.
When you came out, you had never run a fulfillment center before, and maybe an area manager. Just give everybody a little taste. Like, how many? What are you managing?
Yeah, I was responsible for. I was on night shift, and I was responsible for roughly 100 associates.
Amazing.
And making sure we
had. You ever managed anybody in your life?
No, not really. I think I had prior jobs or Jamba Juice as an assistant manager and an internship with Nordstrom during college years, right? But never managed anyone. And it was a really difficult time to be 22 in general. Is a hard time to come straight out of college and step into a managerial role. That we were all learning together, and our building was brand new. It was just launched. So there's a lot of new learning curve for everyone, not just me.
And then 100 people looking at you as the leader.
Looking at me. And also some of them probably questioning why am I the authority figure?
Yeah, in maybe you were asking the same thing.
Yeah, I at times was definitely asking the same thing. And I always value that time because I think that it was it's been foundational to everything else that's happened in my career. So I was an area manager for 3 peak seasons, is how I'll describe it. My second peak, we had already purchased Kiva Systems, now famously Amazon Robotics.
Yeah.
And so I was there on day one of us finding out that we were going to be the first site with Amazon Robotics, and then getting to influence what those processes look like today. It's pretty amazing to see how far we've come.
Amazing.
And then by the third holiday season, we were a sortable. Mm. So our smaller items, people can think of it as AirPods, very popular for us, or iPhone cases. And so we were now in Amazon Robotics sortable building. So in 3 holiday seasons, we were 3 different types of buildings, which was an amazing learning opportunity and consistently keeping you on your toes.
Yeah.
So at that point in time, I was ready to try something new. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went and worked for Amazon Robotics and moved from Seattle to Boston.
In Boston.
To Boston,
fantastic.
I never lived outside of the state of
Isn't
Washington.
Isn't that place like Willy Wonka's factory?
I love it. Now it is.
It's just amazing. Yeah. Around every corner, they've got some
new technology, brewing.
New device, something that helps the associates kind of move packages from the sorter out to the dock, or something that helps sort packages on the line. So fun to go to.
It was, that time, right? It was our classic order. orange robots. Now they're blue. But
big change to go from orange to blue. Yeah.
Massive. Prime blue, I think. But at the time, I like remember talking to my GM and he was like, you're going to be an ops manager soon, which is right the next promotion level in a fulfillment center. And I remember saying, it's like, I want to go and try something new. And if worst case, it doesn't work, I can come back and I can work my way into an ops manager role, right? Yeah. It was a two-way door. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of folks looked at me funny, like, you're skipping on a sooner promotion. And I was like, no, I'm like betting on myself that it'll happen regardless.
Wow, that's great.
And so I went and I took a leap also to Boston. I'd never been to Boston. People are like, why? And I was like, I don't know. I just feel in my body that it was right.
But that team must have loved having a real Amazonian operator on
the team. I think probably one of, if not the first, that like had flipped from Amazon to, I mean, I like literally had a Kiva Systems email alias.
Yeah.
And like really flipped over. And my role was a launch program manager. So it was like to take your Amazon experience and how do you... You know how to operate a building to an extent, right? And how do you take that knowledge and now go and teach the rest of the buildings that we're about to launch? And this is going into 2014. So we were about to launch our large sortable Amazon robotic buildings, which is like a first for us.
Yeah.
Now we have hundreds per se, but like it was like the first of those opportunities. So I was, we had created this content when I was an area manager. My role was a lot of like, how do we operationalize this and like scale this out to the network so we can go. And so I launched Amazon Pantry buildings. Mm-hmm. We launched non-sort buildings. We launched sortable buildings. And across the U.S., I had the chance to go to Poland in that role.
Amazing.
It was like a really awesome experience. And it's particularly funny because that role was 90% travel. And I had never gotten on an airplane before my Amazon interview.
Never?
Yeah. No, I like interviewed.
Where did you grow up?
Here in Washington. Really? And so, and ironically, I interviewed for Amazon in Phoenix. That's where we were doing our area manager interviews. Yeah. And so like they sent me from Seattle to Phoenix. And I was like, but isn't Amazon based here? Do I have to get on a plane? And they're like, yes, you do have to get on a plane. And so I interviewed.
You made up for it though in that final role then.
Yeah. First airplane with Amazon, interviewed on my birthday, which is also doubled. They're like, how's your day going? I was like, It's good. It's my birthday.
What a way to celebrate.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take a job. That sounds like a good, great birthday gift to me.
It must feel good, though, to go around the network now and see what Amazon Robotics has become.
It's eye-opening. I think we all believed in it in, you know, 2012 and quickly saw, like, the value in it.
And it was very, it was, I mean, we were all very optimistic about it, but there was also skepticism about, could we actually do this? Could we put these, nobody had tried to put in robotics at this kind of scale for what we were doing. And now when you walk out into a building, it's a given. And beyond the simple drive units that we were working on back then, there's just like a whole host of technologies.
Yeah, that was, so, just the foundation.
The foundation. So that's really cool that you were there at the beginning.
Yeah, it was remarkable. I think it's also really remarkable to see how many of like the stations and some of the designs that we created back in 2013, 2014 still have been paying dividends out to the network and have just continued to, with small tweaks, get better and better. And so then I took an opportunity to go to Treasure Truck Ops Integration.
Oh my gosh. Treasure Truck.
Yes.
One of my favorites. So Treasure Truck, you know, I wrote the original PR FAQ for Treasure Truck.
I think you told me that in Charleston, which I did not know. And I worked on that team for 2 years.
So, wow, I guess I was not very famous then for writing that PR FAQ. But our PR FAQ is a press release. And any new business idea starts with a press release. And it's a one-page articulation of kind of what are we going to say about this when it launches? And then a few FAQs, frequently asked questions that people might have after they read that. That whole process, by the way, was new to me when I joined Amazon. Yeah. And at first I thought it was the goofiest process I had ever seen. I was like, where's the business plan? Where's the business school kind of seven S's and five F's and all the different frameworks? But I learned to love it because when you are forced to sit down and write, what's the idea in one page? If you can't make it something that everybody's excited about, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
As a business. And if you can get excited about it, oftentimes you'll be like, we'll figure out the economics. We'll figure out how to turn it into a business if it's a cool idea. That one was particularly strange, the treasure truck. And I remember how it started.
That's our treasure. Oh, no, actually, this one's mine. I just picked it up from the Amazon treasure truck.
We've been having conversations kind of at the S team, and there was this notion, which sounds even weirder, that we used to offhandedly refer to as the steak truck. And we had this idea that a truck, we would just load up a truck with as much steak as it could possibly carry, and then just drive it down the street and honk the horn. And then people would run out and say how much steak they would want to buy. Now, that didn't seem like a particularly good idea, but I remember an email came out and it was from Jeff, and he said, hey, can somebody pick up the steak truck idea and turn it into a PRFAQ? And so I said, I foolishly raised my hand and said, I'm going to do it. What came out of that was not focused on steak, but it was, let's build the modern day ice cream truck for adults.
Ice cream truck, yeah.
And so the idea was at some kind of indeterminate frequency, once a week, once a month, who knows, a screaming deal would appear. Instead of hearing the ice cream truck go down the street, your phone would buzz and say that the treasure truck is here, and you would go out and do it. And so it might be stand-up paddle boards, or we had a new release for the Harry Potter book. We did actually put steak on it a few times.
We did put steak on it multiple times, yeah.
And if anybody wants to go back and look online, the treasure trucks were something to behold.
They were.
How do you describe what
I think when we talked a lot about it, it was like, it's kind of like magic on wheels and in essence, right? The first one was very like Amazon fulfillment box oriented,
yes.
Right? And then we rebranded them when we went nationwide, and they were these gorgeous, like probably over the top blue trucks that had bubbles, and they opened, and they had like a television screen for marketing what was on the truck today.
Music.
And they were. Yeah, they had music and custom design art just for that city.
Yes.
That was really.
And they opened up, which I loved. My finance partner at the time in the PRFAQ, it was very specific that said it had a bubble machine, yep. Spouting bubbles and music thumping out and all. Yep. And he would just shake his head every time he read that thing. It said, we've got to put bubble machines in all these trucks.
Oh, we had bubble machines on all the trucks.
Were you sourcing bubble fluid constantly?
Yes, we did work through some escalations of not having the bubbles going when folks arrived at them.
That's right.
Yeah, I look at bubbles a little bit different nowadays after working on
that's amazing.
Truck.
Now, as it turns out, and we probably should have figured this out ahead of time, we sold a lot more when we did it online versus when we had the treasure truck. And all of a sudden, the light kind of went off. It's like, wow, you know, what? One thing people love more than coming to the truck and picking up all the stuff is having us deliver it to their home.
Yeah,
the convenience of that. And so we ended up retiring the treasure trucks at that point.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I still see one like that appears somewhere. My wild treasure truck story, we had set up a treasure truck event and we were doing it here at Lumen Field in Seattle and with Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch was a famous running back for the Seattle Seahawks. And Marshawn Lynch is like, treasure truck? He's like, can I drive it? And I can't remember if it was me or somebody else said yes. And I remember the keys going over into Marshawn Lynch's hands. Yeah. I can remember and all that we had the press there and it was a big hurly-burly and there was all these people running around. And he gets in this treasure truck, starts driving it in the parking lot of Lumen Field. And all I could imagine was like, this is how the treasure truck enterprise ends, when Marshawn Lynch crashes it into some crowd at the end. Thankfully, Marshawn turns out to be an excellent driver, in addition to being an excellent running back, and we had a wonderful team. So it all went well. But I do remember my heart kind of skipping several beats and thinking just as we did it, why on earth did we give those keys to Marshawn Lynch? What's next?
In 2018, I'd say as like a side hustle, I got pulled into scoping the Subsame Day Network.
Mm-hmm.
And so within our organization, it had, you know, a couple leaders had been pulled in to help scope the PRFAQ, how it's operationally look, and like ask for, you know, permission on like what is the design of these buildings going to be. And they started looking a lot more at the robotic side versus maybe the Prime Now style building, which is, you know, manual foot picking, picking, walking up and down aisles like you would at a retailer store.
So you were at the very beginning of our Subsame Day Network, and we're probably going to have to unpack two important things. So first of all, the name, which you're going to hear us talking about it as SSD, Subsame Day Network, or just Same Day Network.
Mm-hmm.
I must admit, Subsame Day is the funniest name I've heard yet to describe it. But maybe what is
The sub-same day network.
The sub-same day network. What is an SSD building and what makes it different than a traditional Amazon building?
Yeah, so the sub-same day buildings are intentionally designed buildings that are located as close as possible to our customers so that we can get to them with the fastest speed viable. They are different than our large fulfillment networks in a few ways. One, the selection we carry is our top roughly 100,000 SKUs that in the network. So the things that our customers are telling us they want the most at the fastest speeds. They actually cover a wider array of selection. In our large network, we would cover sortable, non-sortable, hazmat, grocery. Those are four different building types. Yeah. And we've put them all together in a singular building, which is a new operational model. And then we are also a delivery station.
Yeah, so that's what I think is cool too.
It's a combination of our fulfillment side with our delivery station model together so that we can do the last mile directly out of our buildings and get it to customers within hours.
Yeah, it's an amazing change. I think it's been one of the ways, you know, the teams have done a fantastic job on speed. We hit delivery speed records in 23, 24. We just closed up 25, hit new records, and knock on wood, we're going to hit records again. And a big chunk of it has been the growth of this same-day network. And it really is, you know, I love our big buildings. They're fantastic. They are often located far away from population centers, so you've got a distance there. They have tremendous selection, but you go into one of these same-day buildings and you can watch an order. A customer can place an order. It can drop on the floor and be picked and packed and on the dock within 15 minutes. It was a bit controversial at the beginning. Did we need a new network to do this? Was this the right way to do it?
We faced a healthy amount of friction. Thing we found is there's ways for all of us to do this together.
Yeah.
The dedicated network is one of the offerings that we have to hit speed. But really across that same day space and like race to speed, we have a menu of options that we like provide to customers, right?
What's hard about running an SSD?
I think the part that's complex about running an SSD is all of the integration types. So when I talk about multiple selections in the building, right, the part we have multiple different business lines in our buildings as well. So we do, you know, the AirPods and the diapers, and, you know, we've gotten very good at that because we've done it for a few years. We've now added our grocery offering, right? And that adds a new complexity to just like how you run a building. Those are two vastly different operations for the grander part of the Amazon network, but in SSD, they are one operation. So how do we make sure you're tomatoes and cucumbers get to the driver at the same time that your AirPods are getting there. Yeah. So we send you, you know, ideally a singular driver to your doorstep. Yeah. We have Amazon Pharmacy integrated with us. We have the drones, which are all new offerings that, you know, just change a little bit each day, like how an operator does their role and making sure that we're like focused diligently on how do we simplify those processes for the as our field team is also our customer. And I always say if my team can make it easier on the fields, then they will execute flawlessly for the Amazon customer and the flywheel just continues to go around.
It's been amazing. I think that, you know, those buildings, we built them, like you said, originally they were kind of the top 100,000 items. And we did have the complexity of both our sortable, which is the small items, and our non-sortables coming together. Yeah. And we just said, hey, the customer is going to order this stuff. They don't care you know, if it's big or it's small, they just want it to arrive quickly. And so we said, this is all about allowing a customer to order anything they want, have it arrive quickly. And because we had those, all of a sudden, as we thought about these new other things, we said, wow, could we use these buildings for these also? And then more recently, as we said, hey, can we put the perishable products in there? Yeah. Can we put the, you know, the avocados and the steak and the asparagus into these buildings? And, and yes, the team has figured out how to reset that building and put those in. And then the pharmacy has been, the last couple of years, we've started putting our pharmacy operations in here too. And those are a ton of fun to go see. But it's coming all together in this amazing experience of, as a customer, I can go on and I can do my shopping. I mean, I was honestly doing it yesterday. I'm just trying to think if I covered every one of the product categories you just talked about. I think my daughter needed some packing supplies. I ordered that. I needed a refill on a medication that I had. I ordered that. And then I had some grocery items that I wanted to get for the next day. All of them arrived by 10 p.m. that night. It was kind of an amazing, kind of magical experience how it all came together.
Yeah. As a newer mom, I've come to realize, like, I think before I was like, you know, we're all busy Amazonians. Yeah. Like, we've got 1,000 things on our to-do list. And so you focus on, like, how do you use the Amazon services to avoid a trip to the store? But as a new mom, I think even more, you realize, like, how much you want to, like, force multiply your time.
Yeah.
And how painful it is to get a little tot in and out of the car, yeah, in and out of a stroller or whatnot, and how convenient, like, all of the services are. And, I mean, I order, you know, 2 or 3 times more now.
Well, like, I mean, you are kind of our target customer. I mean, I think families with kids are actually some of the biggest customers we've had, because, I mean, especially in the consumables, grocery, everyday essential space, the number of mouths you have in the house is basically defining, yes, you know, how much you need to buy. And that includes not only the parents and the kids, but the dogs and the cats and everybody else.
Oh,
and those families kind of drive a lot of the household shopping that needs to occur each week. And so we're trying to make it kind of better and easier. How old is your...
She's almost 2.
2, fantastic.
She's almost 2, yeah.
and then your husband is also an Amazonian?
My husband is also an Amazonian, yes. Ben and I worked together, or like cross paths, I should say. So when I was in
Sounds like he more than cross paths. So.
Well, yes. We crossed paths originally, and when we met, when I was an area manager doing the School of Bots part, we trained him as he was moving from Indiana to Dallas.
That's great. And we only have 20 years before your daughter joins us as an area manager.
Yeah, she's probably overhearing all these conversations so that she can just, you know, she'll have a leg up on everyone else.
That's great. Okay, one last SSD question. Yeah. What's next?
What's next? I think our big focus this year is continuation of speed. Mm. So we have expanded already, right?
Yeah.
Our 3-hour offering.
Oh, I used that last night. It's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, so it's Deliver, for customers who aren't familiar, it is the click now and deliver within 3 hours. And then we also have the 1-hour service. So click now and deliver within 1 hour. On the full selection of everything in our building, so all the product categories we've discussed today, and really making it even faster for customers to get those, like, need it now items, especially for, like, the last minute, like, you're packing for a trip and you just need
the
adapter, you know, for Europe or, you know, Europe and Asia are all different, right? Whatever it might be, and being able to, like, get it. So I think customers are going to continue to get magically surprised by how fast we can deliver at their doorstep.
Great. We've hit record speeds, 23, 24, 25. What's really cool is that we've done it while getting safer as well. So all those years, we've been hitting record safety as well, which is great. A lot of people think that when we're speeding up the network, that the individual people are actually working faster. And that's not what's going on well. When you go into a building, the picking activity is the same, whether or not you're working on a same-day order or an order for 4 days from now. And the delivery activity is actually the same as well. You're doing the exact same things, whether or not this is a same-day delivery or this is a delivery from 4 days ago. What really makes speed happen is all the connections between the different processes. I'm really proud of the team, again, not just for the speed performance, but for the safety performance as well.
Yeah.
I love talking to people who've worked in the field, because I do, as you kicked us off, I think the folks in the field really have a tremendous amount of leadership experiences and challenges, and they think a lot about leadership. And so I learn a lot when I go out to the field from those folks about how to be a better leader. And so is there any piece of advice that you've gotten along the way that you found kind of impactful for you?
Some of the most, like, important advice that I've received along the way, and I think I had this from one of my early ops managers, it was like, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it. Mm. And, like, the power of the perception of how, like, a message comes across.
Yeah.
And so, like, an example is, like, when you're a very green area manager that I was, it wasn't like I was giving direction and it was the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like it's very direct in tone, or it's missing the why this is important, and stepping back and making sure that, like, your teams understand the why behind a ask that a leader is directing upon.
Yeah.
I think my team today would say I'm, like, a very transparent leader.
Yeah.
And I like to try and, you know, step back and say the why, or even when we do change communications to our field, it's like, why is this important? Why should I care about this? Is, like, really important.
Yeah.
And, like, softening the tone to, like, make sure, like, you kind of come down to, like, where your team is at to communicate that message is, like, really stuck with me. And I think it applies
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
I think both of those are great. I do think the why, one, it can often just remove a lot of misperceptions because people quickly jump to conclusions when they hear a message. And then if you could tell them why you're giving it to them, it usually diffuses a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And it's a great teaching mechanism for them as well. And then I like the idea of tone. When I took on this role and I started visiting the field a lot, in the beginning, I was actually... I felt a little nervous. I was out there. I had not been a lot out in the field. I was afraid I was going to be using the wrong words to describe things or come across as like, you know, like I didn't know what the hell, you know, operations was all about. Yeah. But I did find that I probably did use the wrong words and explain things in the wrong way. But just coming across as kind of genuinely interested in what was going on and genuinely thankful went a long way. And like you said, most people don't remember the specifics of what we talked about, but they do remember the emotional content of the visit and kind of what we talked about. And I think about that one a lot too. And I'm like, don't worry so much about the specifics, but worry about kind of... What's the message, the bigger message that you're trying to deliver when you go to that fulfillment center? We do one thing here, which is we give you an opportunity. I ask like 10,000 questions, and then I give you the opportunity to ask a single question. And
Perfect. So
I'll give you the opportunity. Is there anything you would like to flip the script on me and ask about?
Sure. Yeah. I think in the kind of along the same lines of the last question there, and in the spirit of growth and continuation of growth, like what's a piece of feedback that you've received through your career that's stuck with you?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe what's a piece of feedback that you find yourself giving to the organization or like organizational leaders, like more often than not, that you think the audience would?
Yeah. Well, your story kind of reminded me when I first joined Amazon, I had a team of 23. They had been put in place to focus on consumables and everyday essentials, and I was brought in to be their leader. And when I first came in, I was getting immersed in the business. And I went out, actually visited the field. We had like 6 fulfillment centers at the time. I visited all of them. I went through all the numbers. You know, we have this process here, the weekly business review, the WBR. I would get the deck in advance. And that is a deck which usually has, you know, 50 to 100 pages of metrics that we go through as a group every week. I would go through it ad nauseum and do all my own research and look up things and go through that. As a result, when we got into those WBRs, I was actually pretty quiet because I had actually answered all my questions. I had kind of read everything in advance. So I spent all this time doing that, working on the bigger idea, the bigger plan of where we were going. And I remember my manager, Diego Piacentini, kind of 4 to 6 months in, did a quick kind of check-in review. And he got feedback, you know, just kind of verbatim feedback from folks on the team and who I was working with. And there was a bunch of nice stuff in there. You know, Doug's a big thinker and he's very optimistic and he's like, you know, Mr. Innovation, he's leading forward. But it says he doesn't appear to be close to the operating details of the business. And he doesn't appear close to the, or that interested in the operating metrics. And I went back to my HR partner and I was like, I was also a little frustrated. I was like, oh my gosh, I actually know these metrics better than anybody because all my time is spent on this. In fact, I have more time because I've just come in new, so I don't have other responsibilities. And my HR partner, who was wonderful, she said to me, she says, well, first, Doug, how would they know? If you don't tell them, you know, how do they know that you're connected? She goes, let's think about that WBR session where you're actually quiet the whole time and other people are talking and asking questions. How are they going to understand? And she says, I think you should really think about improving your visible leadership skills. And I was like, visible leadership? And she was like, you are so lucky because you have some amazing teachers here for visible leadership. Just look at, watch what Jeff Bezos does when we do the big WBR. Watch what Jeff Wilkie does when we do the big WBR. And for me, that was like a light switch moment. Like I had really been thinking about, you know, what I had to accomplish and all the, you know, how I was going to understand everything and all the metrics and that idea that, you know, think about what it means to be a visible leader, to demonstrate connection with the business for your team, and then to do a lot of the stuff that you talked about, which is ask questions, not just to show that you care, but ask questions, even when you might know the answer, ask questions to teach or ask questions to demonstrate what's important. What should we all care about as leaders?
Yeah.
to kind of learn, to help develop kind of common mental models. And so I remember very clearly that discussion and then going off from there and just using every interaction with, let's say, Jeff to kind of watch how he would question and answer and engage with teams to get everybody pulling in the same direction and thinking about things in the same way. And I could see that he would often ask the same question again and again and again in different forums, but it was all trying to get people to think about the same way. And for me, it was super powerful. I think that was the, you know, I talk a lot about how I like the idea of service-oriented leadership where you're less focused on what's important to me and more like, what can I do to help the rest of the team? And that was, I think, the beginning of that that journey for me. And I give that advice to people when I see them a lot. Sometimes I see leaders, and especially in this environment where people can be on Zoom calls and they're kind of not really participating. They're kind of, they may or may not come on the screen. They may or may not blink in. And I have this conversation too with them. It's like, wow, you know, it's probably not important to you to get on the screen. It's probably not important to you to kind of engage because you might be three steps beyond what everybody's talking about. But it's actually, you're giving so much back to the organization if you do become a more visible leader. Explain the why and explain, you know, why is this important? How are you thinking about it? Where do you think we should be going? And try to get leaders to think not about just themselves and what they need to be successful, but their teams and kind of how they can be successful too.
Yeah, our teams are taking cues from us, right? Like in every opportunity that they see, you know, me sitting at a table, my team is looking at me, it's thinking like, you know, if I'm multitasking and like not paying attention, like they're going to think that's,
yeah,
you know, acceptable for them when they have an opportunity. But like, you know, we could be missing opportunities to like recognize we have a seat at this table for a reason. We should use our voice to be inquisitive or learn or, you know, maybe even direct the conversation depending on what the topic is, right? And each of those are learning opportunities for ourselves or for the peers around us.
All right. Good question. But you only get one. So
yes,
that was it.
Only one.
Candace, you've done so many different things. You've been in the SSD world for a while. Why do you like it so much?
I think the thing that has kept me here is no year has been the same. Each year has presented a different challenge. And so no year's felt stagnant or I've never felt like I knew everything. And I was like, I got to go try something else because it seems to keep coming to me, which is a beautiful spot to be. And I get to dabble in a lot of different industries, but I think like speed is ultimately changing how customers shop with us so significantly that I feel like I'm making the biggest impact in the role I have today.
Yeah.
And that's kept me around.
That's cool. I do agree. The SSD network is always changing and evolving. And I love the teams that run those buildings because they are so open to change. I walk into about half of them usually have construction going on and say, what's this construction? And they're like, oh, we're adding a pharmacy. Oh, we're adding a perishable grocery. Oh, we're adding a drone launch. And they all take it in stride and they're all super excited about it too. And of course, we were together in Charleston and saw some of the new automation, which is quite significant that we were looking at, which has the opportunity to kind of dramatically expand the assortment that we have there and make it even easier to operate those buildings. And I would guess too that we've not seen the end of the evolution of those buildings. So it's going to be pretty exciting to watch.
Completely agree. And I think the evolution of how they're unfolding is just, it's super engaging and it's keeping all of our central teams and field teams engaged in what they're doing because they know that they're on the front end of something new and something, you know, cutting edge.
Thank you, Candace, so much for coming. Thank you for everything you've done for Amazon for the last 15 years and for our customers. Now that I've heard your whole journey, I'm like, wow, you've had your fingerprints on so many of the big, important things that we've done and things like Treasure Trek.
It was a learning experience.
Thank everybody for joining our podcast. If you've enjoyed this and you want to learn more, come back. You can subscribe to our podcast and come back and listen to future episodes. And of course, if any of you have a person or an innovation or a business that you'd like to learn more about, feel free to leave that suggestion in the comments line below and we'll take a look at it in the future. Thanks, everybody.